Today, a movie we review, Hail Caesar and Zoolander 2. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello.
Time for another podcast.
Yay.
I know. There's a movie that we probably won't review because we saw it as civilians, but I did want to talk about Kung Fu Panda 3.
You did?
We're not going to review it, are we?
No.
So... What did you guys think of it? Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it, although I'm the world's biggest fan of Kung Fu Panda 1 and almost as much of Kung Fu Panda 2.
So I loved Kung Fu Panda 1 and 2. I have to say I was disappointed by 3.
No.
Actually, I was really disappointed by 3. It was nice to see him again. It was nice to see Po, but... Yeah, disappointing. It didn't deliver on the promise of how good the ending of 2 was.
Well, 1 and 2 are pretty special. So I think it's hard to measure up, probably.
Yeah, it's kind of like Mockingjay, Hunger Games, where 1 and 2 were spectacular, 2 in particular.
Yeah.
3 was very good by all measures. It's just it doesn't stand up to the glory that was 1 and 2. But I had a lot of fun with it. So I was very... pleased to see the trilogy wrap up as nicely as it did, and totally worth your while, Yasti. Catch it while you can.
Okay, I will. Maybe tonight.
So, sorry about that. I did want to sneak that in because I don't think we had planned a review. We didn't see a screening of that, but we've reviewed, I think, 1, 2, and 3 on the show. So, all right. Before we talk about our proper reviews of the week, Hail Caesar and Zoolander, let's talk about our weekly Netflix picks. I can't find anything on Netflix. So, guys, what do you have to recommend to our listeners?
So, I'm actually excited about this one. Uh-oh. And I think this... I can't remember if this was on my Desert Island picks many, many years ago when we did that. But I think, as of today, it would be on my list. It is the Australian movie Strictly Ballroom. And this is basically... in the vein of if you love Muriel's Wedding, it's that same sensibility. It's basically a guy who gets dumped by his dancing partner just before a major dance competition. And he's really gifted and he's supposed to win the Olympics eventually. And, you know, it's kind of like an ugly duckling story. And it's got a great soundtrack and it's just, again, that wonderful Australian humor. Yeah, brilliant. Strictly Ballroom.
I think this might have been Baz Luhrmann's first
Correct.
Or second movie.
Correct.
Yes. So it was before Baz Luhrmann became victim
Moulin
to...
Rouge.
Well, victim
you
to
know.
His own excesses.
Yes.
I think he had his excesses.
This had the right amount of excess and... Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I'm not the biggest fan of it, although it's a delightful movie.
I just love it. I mean, that last scene makes me cry every time. And makes me want to paso doble.
I love the movie because it reminds me of a syndrome that I think occurs in many areas of life where people attach extraordinary importance to things that I find unimportant. Now, ballroom dancing is very important to the people for whom it's important, but to me, there's an absurdity to how...
And how technical it
and
is,
And how
right?
technical it can get.
Yeah.
So I find a lot of humor in that. And I don't think the movie is necessarily poking fun at that, but that theme is it just reminds me of like things like HOAs and, you know, people who...
Rule makers.
Yes.
Busybodies.
Yeah. So, and society, and there's a lot of stuff in there.
And
great pick.
It's a movie from 1992 before ballroom dancing was trendy with Dancing with the Stars or Strictly Come Dancing and, you know, how it's marketed in other countries these days.
Yeah.
Love this movie.
It was his first film, Baz Luhrmann's. And now for something completely different. My recommendation for Netflix pick of the week is a movie which currently in 2016 is nominated as one of the best documentaries, and it's the movie Cartel Land.
And so different.
It's so different. It could not be more different, but We saw this at Tribeca, I believe, yes, earlier in the year. And when I was
early last year.
Early last year in 2015. And as I was watching it, you know, obviously, as the name implies, Cartel Land is about the Mexican cartels and, you know, what's going on right now. And, you know, we've seen a fine, fine movie in the form of Sicario, which dealt with the same issues. And there have been many movies about, you know, about the whole Mexican cartel line. But this is a documentary. And while I was watching it, there were certain parts which I was absolutely 100% convinced were recreated or staged by the director to kind of show what actually happened when a certain group of people clashed or when certain things happened. And I was absolutely gobsmacked. And to this day, I'm gobsmacked that those were not staged things. Those were actually things which were happening. And for the life of me, I don't know how this director had access to this kind of stuff. But, you know, there is the, in Greek mythology, there is this thing called the Ouroboros. And it's the serpent which eats its own tail. And, you
That's
know,
right.
this
yeah.
movie kind of gives you a sense of how completely twisted things are in Mexico right now with the whole situation with cartels where, you know, one group of, you know, civilian vigilante group comes up to fight the cartels and they're successful in ultimately bringing the cartels down. And then we realize that that group themselves become cartels, you know, and this is happening around the world right now where somebody kind of fights to remove an evil regime and then those people get corrupted by evil as well. So this is it'll just shake you to your core. I think it's necessary viewing. It's a hard movie to watch. But if you're in the mood for, you know, something fairly bracing, then Cartel Land, I cannot recommend it enough.
Yeah, I remember being punched in the throat by this when we watched it at Tribeca last year. And I mean that in the good sense, in the fact that this movie completely floored me. It's had a huge impact on the way I view a lot of things politically since then, which is interesting when a movie can kind of change you in that way. So, yeah, I couldn't recommend it more highly either. And I think it's probably my best documentary of 2015. We haven't done our muggies yet, but this one's right up there for me.
Yeah, I had that sick feeling that you have in the pit of your stomach where you're like, what do you believe when you watch the news and you hear about what's going on around the world? Like, what do you believe? Yeah. Who's telling the truth? What's really happening out there? And it just leaves you with that really sick feeling right in the pit of your stomach. Really good movie. Great recommendation.
And not to belabor this, but I think that one of the reasons why this is very effective is because there's nothing academic about this documentary. Some documentaries tend to become kind of, you know, very educational and giving you information on this day, this person attacked this. There's none of that. I mean, mm-hmm. It just kind of plays along in real time. You know, it asks you to fill in the gaps a few places and it's just very kinetic. I mean, it's just following what's happening and it's just altogether remarkable.
Amazing.
I mean, it's got that slow destruction of hope.
Yeah.
Right? The death of a people.
Yeah. And I was going to go along with something, another documentary, Winter on Fire, but I'll save that for next time. Instead, I'll talk about a movie that I was flicking through Netflix. Rashmi was traveling this past week and I was flicking through Netflix and I came across a little gem that I hadn't seen since the 80s called Warriors. And this is one of those gang movies back in the 80s. It's kind of a cult movie. It is not necessarily the most sophisticated movie in terms of plot. The cinematography itself is absolutely remarkable. And it features a very young James Remar, you know, before he went on to do Sex and the City and you know, some of his more well-known roles. But this was a movie that I saw when I was probably a teenager, and in the UK at least, there was enormous controversy about it because it was being passed around as what we call video nasties back in the day, and it was supposed to be one of the most horrifically violent movies that was corrupting youth and creating the downfall of society, at least the way we, you know, we, so of course, me being the age I was at the time, you know, got together group of friends and we watched this thing and we were all walking around like, you know, tough guy with baseball bats for a few weeks. But it's set almost entirely in New York in the subways. Really great fun movie, terrific soundtrack, and it's kind of one of those Carpenter-esque type movies from back in the 80s, which I'm a huge fan of. So the movie Warriors, it's just popped up on Netflix and It's nowhere near as violent as I remembered it to be back in the day. Filmmaking has obviously moved on in terms of fight choreography and action, but it's not entirely mindless. So, you know, don't think that this is a terrible B-movie. A lot of fun.
And not to be confused with the movie Warrior, which came out a couple of years ago with Joel Edgerton and Tom Hardy as brothers who compete in a boxing match.
Remember which was that a one? Good movie. Which I was a really great liked film, that yeah. one.
And I don't think that one's on
I don't
Netflix.
Think Joe liked that one.
I liked that one. I did. You I liked did? That one okay. a lot. Yeah, the Tom. I think it was Tom my Hardy. My pick for best actor was probably Tom Hardy that year in the Muggies, which we haven't done yet. So, okay, so Warriors, we have
Strictly Ballroom.
Strictly Ballroom, and Cartel we have Land. Cartel Land. So plenty to watch on Netflix. Check them out. Two movies to talk about in our main section today. We have Hail Caesar and Zoolander number 2. I'm going to suggest we start with Hail Caesar, which is the latest in a string of movies by Joel and Ethan Coen. They really don't need any introduction. No Country for Old Men, True Grit, Fargo, Burn After Reading.
True Grit.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So I'm thinking of the one with Oscar
man.
Isaacs in it.
Oh, Inside Llewyn Davis.
Inside Llewyn Davis, yes. Which I think was their last big release. So as directors, Joel and Ethan Coen need no introduction. If you listen to Movie Wild Oz, you're probably very familiar with who they are. They assembled a terrific cast here for this movie. George Clooney, Josh Brolin, Tilda Swinton, Ralph Fiennes, Jonah Hill, Frances McDormand, Channing Tatum, Scarlett Johansson, Alden Ehrenreich, Christopher Lambert. It goes on. So the movie is essentially a day in the life of a studio fixer played by George Clooney, who is presented with plenty of problems to fix in the typical Coen brothers comic caper way. Guys, what did you think of Hail Caesar?
Hail Caesar, hail Coen brothers. I love the Coen brothers. And here is yet another wonderful offering. I love this movie. Funny, smart. It works on multiple levels and it's super entertaining. It says so much in a non-obvious way about, you know, Hollywood and entertainment and politics and God and religion and gender discrimination, yet it's so light and frothy and wonderful. I love this movie.
Yes, Dee.
So I, you know, on a recent...
I saw you sit back in your chair when I started, so...
On a recent plane trip, I happened to watch A Serious Man again. And remember, that was the one where, you know, we all watched the movie and...
Until Sandy came, right, and Sandy came and educated
us. We came away puzzled, like, what is this? What is this? And then our good friend Sandy Cook came over and educated us. And suddenly the movie opened up. And, you know, it's incredible when you watch it for a second time. You completely get it, because part of it is you kind of get... You kind of used to the tone, because it was a very... unsettling tone to get used to, and now I really think, you know, Serious Man is one of the Coen brothers' better movies, and maybe it's the same for Hail Caesar. Maybe I need to see it again, but I think that the individual pieces are just incredible. So, you know, there's the whole bit with Scarlett Johansson, which is in its own universe. I wanted a whole movie
just
of that
scene.
Just that scene. There's the whole part with Channing Tatum and, you know, his own story, and I would have loved to see that. But it seemed like all those little pieces, for me personally, don't come together as a whole. And I know maybe it's the tone, which is too light-hearted, too, you know, that I understand it's about, you know, like many of the Coen brothers movies, like A Serious Man, like Barton Fink, like a lot of movies, it's about a person having an existential crisis. And that's what the whole movie is Josh Brolin's movie. But at the end of the day, I was kind of left feeling that the movie was almost intentionally flat. I mean, I kind of came away feeling, is that all there is to this movie? Because it seemed too obvious. I mean, of course, you know, you follow a surgeon through a day and you will realize all the things he has to deal with. So, you know, the Coen brothers are so exalted and I like them so much that at this point I expected more from this movie. And all the little pieces, I didn't understand the Tilda Swinton piece at all. It just seemed like a throwaway. So it seemed like some pieces worked, some didn't. George Clooney was completely disposable. So I don't know. I need to watch this again. But at the same time, I feel if I have to watch a movie twice, doesn't that mean inherently that there is... I almost see that as a negative. So I don't know.
Depends.
I'm torn.
I mean, the studio will see it as a positive if you buy two tickets.
So I'm torn about this one. I need to see it again. What did you think?
Yeah, you know, I don't feel like it's their best work. I feel like it's a long way from that. It felt very much like a collage of different set pieces. And in the moment, each of those individual pieces were entirely hilarious. I mean, the one you haven't mentioned is the one with Ralph Fiennes trying to direct Alden Einrich.
I was going to get there.
Which was just one of the funniest moments that in living memory in the theatre. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant, and it's brilliantly acted, and it's note perfect. And there are many moments like that in this movie which are crafted in the way that only the Coens can do. They have this particular way of pulling out the absurdity in moments and putting them on screen for us to see, and yeah, existential crisis, but also that kind of moment when the characters looking around them and the behaviors around them are so bizarre, and yet they're like, am I the only one that can see this? You know, they have lots of those wonderful moments. But yeah, I felt a little ambivalent about all of it. I don't remember really much about the film in terms of its plot. I just remember, you know, this collection of very funny moments. So overall, I can't hide my disappointment, because the Coen Brothers movies are always such an event for me. And, you know, this one has kind of just come and gone. I don't know if the timing of its release is any suggestion to how the studio or perhaps they themselves felt about it, but it's not up there for me.
Oh my God, I think I watched a different movie. So for me, let me see if I can try and articulate some of the reasons why I loved it. There's obviously so much cleverness, right? There's a movie within a movie. Mm-hmm. The title is Hail Caesar, right? So I think Caesar in this movie is the Hollywood studios. And for me, what it's showing is the enormous power that these studios had over people's lives, to the extent where they were able to manufacture stories, bring in hitmen, bring in people who smooth things over, relationships with journalists where Tilda Swinton comes in. And then this kind of naughtiness that hides underneath everything, right? The great scene with Channing Tatum where it's all these sailors dancing. And then there's a little bit of naughtiness thrown in at the end where the guys are dancing together. Yeah. And it's so blatant that it's in your face.
It's
and
bonkers.
Yet we just see it as kind of light, frothy entertainment, right? But when you look underneath, there's something more. The whole story of Scarlett Johansson and what her character ends up, what ends up happening to her character, and how they try and control that story. So Hail Caesar for me is Caesar is the Hollywood studio and this universe they build around themselves where they can do no wrong. They are like the kings. And then all of the things that go along underneath to try and undermine that in some way.
So you've got the kind of very meta take on it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And then, you know, I was just blown away by the dialogue. It's so clever. I wrote down these things like, they use things like her importuning, or he did it with a mirthless chuckle. I mean, it's delightful. It's delightful. We never hear this kind of dialogue in any other movie. And for me, it kind of had that same sensibility as Grand Budapest Hotel. Obviously, it wasn't a Wes Anderson. It had the Coen brothers' fingerprint all over it. But it had that same joyful delight about it. And yet there was something very political. There's this whole political scene that's going on. And, you know, this whole play of capitalism and communism and I mean, I could go on forever. I'll shut up, but I think that's the genius of the movie for me.
So I see all of those things. I completely got all of those things. I got how the movie is kind of at some unspecified time. I don't know if it's meant to be the 40s or the 50s or whenever, but you know, they are in love with, you know, those Ethel Merman kind of swimming things. They're in love with the musical and, you know,
old Hollywood.
They have so much affection for it, but at the same time, they're kind of, you know, criticizing it. And
correct.
They're saying there was all these scandals bubbling underneath that, you know, nobody really knew of, which should come as no surprise to anyone. I understand that there's this whole piece about, you know, they go to different religious heads, and we've seen this in kind of A Serious Man as well, and they all
that
talk
God
about
theme. That's
the
a
God
big
theme.
God theme, yeah.
You know, the Josh Brolin character is completely at a crossroads of his life. He's going through an existential crisis. I understand all of that, but it somehow doesn't add up together for me. It just seems like a best of reel.
Yeah.
Like they've pulled little pieces from other movies. I would have loved to see a whole movie about Scarlett Johansson and her movie and what was going on. I would have loved to see a whole piece about the Channing Tatum story, but it seemed like little pieces pulled together which don't quite
It's fragmented stick. And recycled.
Yeah, but I think what it's doing is, like you said, it's paying homage to those movies and what we see as the audience when we watch those movies in the time, and even when we see them subsequently, is this glossy picture of Hollywood and the synchronized swimmers and how precise it all is. But really, it's not. And I think that's what it's doing. It's taking us behind the scenes of these glossy, multi, you know, productive movie studios that were literally churning out hundreds of movies in a year with these actors who were kind of on the books, you know, contract actors who didn't get paid very much. And really, the winner was the studio. So I think it's really a dialogue of the industry in a way.
As it was. But, I mean, you introduce all these elements, but then you do nothing with them. Right. And so...
But that's because the story without them is so rich.
But it feels like... I say this a lot, but it feels like you almost want to have like a mini-series where each episode focuses on a different character, because there is a richness of material here in the script. But what ends up happening is that, you know, you spend a few minutes here, then you go into something else, and you never come back. And I'm left hungry for what happens next with Channing Tatum's character, because that was a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
It was really funny.
Or the Frances McDormand, she has one scene and she just knocks you out. And I wanted more of her. I wanted, you know, so it just seems like, I know it's Josh Brolin's story and these are all people who are satelliting around him. So in a way, I understand how it's constructed, but it somehow didn't feel enough.
So I'll agree with you. My one criticism of the movie is, if you're going to go to all the trouble of having great actors like Frances McDormand or even Jonah Hill, they literally get one scene each, and it would have been great to have more of them. But I certainly felt, again, very satiated at the end of the movie.
Like, I'll grant you that much. The best part of the whole movie was all those scenes with Alden Ehrenreich. For me, he was the MVP in the movie amongst all these actors. I mean,
he was so good.
He was so good. His character was so good. Everybody he was interacting with was so good. And, you know,
what to do?
Yeah, you're trying to fit, you know, a square peg into a round hole, and, you know, brilliant. At the same time, he is a very smart, very skilled individual, but they're asking him to use skills that he doesn't possess, and all of his scenes were beautiful.
Isn't that a great take on life?
Yes,
and we end up in situations where we're good at picking apples and then we're told to, you know, plant pear trees. It's a great observation.
And I wanted a whole movie about him. But to kind of have him tethered to Josh Brolin's story somehow, I don't know, maybe it's a question of connection. And maybe I need to watch it again and watch all those themes emerge so that they'll coalesce. But they all seemed like, you know, little pieces. Anyway, I probably
need Okay, to, let's wind this one up. So, Joe.
So, I say this a lot at the moment. The movie was very entertaining. And there were some wonderful moments and some, you know, very memorable scenes. But ultimately, it ended up as being less than the sum of its parts. It didn't coalesce in a way that was meaningful for me. That's not to say it's not worth your time. It's extraordinarily entertaining. And if you like the Coens' view on the world, which I think, you know, most moviegoers do, then it's certainly one to watch. So I'm going to give it a fairly generous 7 out of 10, but it's far from my favorite Coen Brothers movie. It is more likable than the Inside Llewyn Davis I had a really hard time with a year or two ago. So, you know, to step up from that, but... Yeah, 7 out of 10.
Yes, D.
Yeah, maybe I'm not smart enough for this. Like, there's this whole piece about communist writers, you know, that the George Clooney character interacts with. And there's all these references to so many things which completely went over my head. I mean, I did not... All of those individual writers there are supposed to represent somebody, and I'm not learned enough. I don't know enough about the history at that time.
Well, it's almost
that
it was a cross-reference to the Trumbo movie.
I know, but it was lost on me. I mean, okay. I was like, they Have were saying Trumbo? Things. Yes, I've seen Trumbo. They were saying things which kind of, I'm like, this is supposed to be very witty and very smart, but I'm not getting it. And maybe the fault is with me, you know, but I will give it a 7 out of 10 as well. I think the Coen brothers made a lot more frenetic, a lot more angry movie about the studio system, which was Barton Fink, which was about a New York writer who's pulled in to, you know, write movie for Hollywood. And I think for me that seemed a more fully realized movie, even in tone. So 7 out of 10. I need to watch it again.
Okay, so clearly today I have realized that I am the genius smart one in the room today. So I win that prize. So hail, 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 Coen brothers. I love, 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 love this movie. Brilliance. Absolute sheer brilliance. I want to give it a 9 just to counterbalance your 7s. I'll give it an 8 out of 10. I love this movie and I can't wait for Joe to buy this on DVD for me.
Yeah, no, it I mean, I'll give it that. It was very funny at times. Very, very entertaining.
Yeah.
Moving on, Zoolander number 2. So, Rashmi, I think you're going to tell us about Zoolander.
Okay, so this is a continuation of Zoolander 1, I guess the original, where Derek and Hansel are modeling again when an opposing company attempts to take them out from the business. So this is directed by Ben Stiller and written by Ben Stiller, Justin Theroux, and Nicholas Stoller and John Hamburg, and basically stars Olivia Munn, Penelope Cruz, Christine Taylor, Kristen Wiig, Ben Stiller, Benedict Cumberbatch, Justin Theroux, Mila Jovovich, Will Ferrell, Owen Wilson, Ariana Grande, Susan Sarandon, Billy Zane, Macaulay Culkin, Justin Bieber, Demi Lovato, Kim Kardashian West, Katy Perry, Kiefer Sutherland. I could go on, but I won't.
You already have.
And yes, you're the only one that saw this. I couldn't watch it because I couldn't get myself even through Zoolander 1 in the beginning.
The horror.
And I was out of town.
Okay.
So tell us. Tell us otherwise.
It's not a very good movie, which really hurts me because I do tend to, you know, there's some directors who just resonate for you and, you know, believe it or not, Ben Stiller is that. I mean, I've liked, you know, I like The Cable Guy and Reality Bites and Tropic Thunder and even The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. So it comes as a surprise to me that this movie was directed by Ben Stiller as well. It's a complete throwaway. And I think maybe that's the point of Zoolander as a character, that it's all meant to be throwaway. I think it might help if you've had a few beers before you've seen this movie. I'll grant you, some of the dialogue is very, very funny. Kristen Wiig is in this, completely unrecognizable. And then the rest of the movie,
she almost looks like, when I've seen from the trailers, is like this Eastern European.
Well, she's meant to be, you know, an unintelligible Donatella Versace. That's who she's supposed to be. But, you know, and the movie has managed to rope in some of the big fashion names. So like, you know, Anna Wintour is in this, and Marc Jacobs is in it, and Tommy Hilfiger is in it. And, you know, little pieces of it work, and I was smiling through all of it, but, I wasn't ha-ha laughing.
And did you love the first one?
I did love the first one. And I think part of the problem might be that at this point in time, if you're making a sequel, it needs to be raunchy, and it needs to be really mean, and it needs to be nihilistic. And it kind of feels tired, and it kind of feels old and kind of, you know, outdated at this point.
We all know that sequels need to be twice as good to be received as half as well.
And then it got just exhausting because the movie is literally a cavalcade of cameos. And I think it's Ben Stiller just called all his friends. I mean, Susan Sarandon has half a line of dialogue. You know, Katy Perry is there for like 5 seconds. Justin Bieber is there for, I don't know, at the starting for a scene. So it's not, I don't know that I don't think I can recommend this movie. I think, like I said, if you've had a few margaritas, if you're at the back of a plane, you know, watch it. It'll make you giggle here and there. And bless her heart. You know, Penelope Cruz has the really thankless job of being the love interest. You know, she puts in everything she has, but it's such a thankless job. I kind of felt sorry for her. Owen Wilson, they have some really good lines. Maybe you should watch it for the script, but it's a disappointment. It's not that funny. I'm sorry. Score. 5 out of 10.
And what would you have given the first one?
Oh, an 8 or a 7. I really liked it. It had a cheekiness about it. And it kind of made this point that Zoolander is the most vain, most stupid person. But at the end, he has a heart. And the movie kind of tries to go through that with the whole subplot about his son, who really is not. He expects his son to be like super smart and, you know, but you know, his, it's this overweight little kid, you know, who is completely lost. And Sting is here. Oh my God, I feel so embarrassed for Sting being in this movie, you know, and he's a major plot point in the movie. So anyway, it's just silly. And maybe that's the whole point of Zoolander. And I've lost it.
Hail
maybe,
Caesar.
Maybe I've grown too old to enjoy Zoolander.
Hail Caesar.
So, yeah, yes. I remember watching it. Well, I say I remember watching. I had a very, I don't know if it's a false memory or not, but I feel like I've watched Zoolander, but found it so entirely disposable that I have no memory of it.
See, we couldn't even decide if Joe had watched it or not. That's a that like strange conversation we had around Zoolander.
It was one of those back of an airplane kind of, you know, transatlantic fuzzy head, you know, yeah, moments. But the entire thing seems so disposable to me. And even the marketing material for this movie has been completely, entirely unappealing. So
yeah, and I think the other fatal thing that they did is, you know, what was really memorable for me, and I am a fan of the original Zoolander movie, what was really memorable was Will Ferrell as the bad guy,
yeah,
you know, Mugatu. And in, you know, you need to bring somebody else here, you know, who is equally memorable, who is equally off the wall. But they decided to bring
Tom Hardy.
Yeah, or somebody. Yeah, Tom Hardy. They do have Benedict Cumberbatch, you know, who plays this weird model called All. But I wanted another bad guy. I mean, right, it seemed lazy to go back to Mugatu. And I know Will Ferrell and him are friends, but that's not reason enough. So anyway.
All right.
5 out of 10. And that's generous. Yes.
Let's wrap it up for today. Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers as well. Facebook.com/movierollers. Can't forget about that because that's where we get most interaction. So if you're not a friend of us on Facebook, do be. You can find us. We post.
Not doobie, as in.
Be do. Or
please be our friend.
Like us.
Yeah.
Somebody has to. So until our next episode, two new movies, too little time. A good night from me.
Hail Caesar. Good night from me.
And me as well.
You're dying to do that.